This is a production of Cornell University.
GPSA meeting, November 3rd, 2008.
Okay, we're going to get started. The meeting is called to order at 5:32. Hello, everybody, and thank you for making tonight's meeting. As usual, my name is Mario Guerrero, and I'm the Executive Vice President of GPSA. To my left, to your right, is Michelle Leinfelder. She is our illustrious president. And to my right is Deandra, and she's our Vice President of Operations. We're going to move right away to open forum. This is a time where anyone, if you have an announcement of any type or an issue you'd like to bring up, this would be the appropriate time to do that. Are there anybody in the area that has an announcement? Yes, sir.
I'm Trish. I'm from the event planning committee. We're probably going to have a report about this in the next thing, but I wanted to highlight that one of the main things we're trying to do is to better publicize all the events that are already going on campus. And one of the ways we're trying to do this is through Facebook GPSA group that's available for joining for all graduate and professional students. Mm-hmm. So I guess for the for all the representatives of various fields, it would be nice if you could spread the word that people should join this group, because all the events and most of the events and stuff will be advertised there. And if you individually could invite all your friends and maybe send out an email in your department saying that it's available, and it's a good way to find out what's going on campus, and if you could join that group, that would be great.
Very good. If you would like also, if you want to send me an email, I can send it out through the listserv. Or you can, actually, anyone can send it out through the listserv.
You can send it out yourself through the listserv.
Do you know which listserv we're talking about? The
GPSA-members@assembly.cornell.edu.
Either way, if you don't have a chance to write down, you can let us know and we'll help you out afterwards. But thank you. Anything else? Deandra.
So a few of my constituents, I represent the government department, mentioned some concern about patient treatment at Gannett Health Center, and they just asked me to relay that to everyone here. They just said that on a number of occasions, a number of people have experienced unpleasant treatment at Gannett, and so they just wonder, you know, what can be done about certain things.
Like people were rude to them?
They said that it was just an overall unpleasant experience, you know, from the time they got, like, the reception into the center, and I think it was more like this infantilization.
I've experienced that, too.
So, Brian, I'm wondering if...
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So, I guess, either you can tell me afterward, or...
And also just checking in with them to see what their procedures are for checking quality to get feedback from patients. I can't recall if they do.
Well, I don't know.
That might, no, but that may be something to check in with them.
We'll look into it.
Thanks. Okay. Yes?
On November 15th, I'll be hosting an event called Society of Neutrality, and this is basically going to be an idea generating charrette, so we can create a whole bunch of bottom-up ideas help Cornell go carbon neutral. And these ideas will eventually be a part of Cornell's climate action plan. And this is student-focused, bottom-up approaches for how we can mitigate our carbon footprint here at Cornell. I sent an email to a couple of you, including Michelle, asking for a representation at this event. I guess Michelle is going to call on people to come to that event in a little bit.
Now, did you want to invite certain people, or did you just want anybody that can make it?
Anyone who's interested.
Okay, so do you want to send it to, either Michelle can send it to me, or you could send it to me, and I'll send it to the GPSA info, which will go out soon.
Oh, yeah, I was looking for GPSA members.
Oh, GPSA, okay, yeah. That's what I was asking. Okay. Anything else under open forum?
Well, I guess just to tag on to that then. Since Mike already announced it, if you do have an interest or if you want to learn more, speak to Mike after the meeting. And then if you need to ruminate on it, then you can email me later if you're more interested. interested in more information later.
But does anybody have any questions on that? Nope.
We're going to be providing lunch, and there's probably going to be a raffle too.
Okay. We're going to move on to reports. First up is our president.
Okay. So just to recap on a few things that have happened since our last meeting a couple weeks ago, five of us went to the Ivy Summit, which was hosted by Harvard this year. So the Ivy Summit is the leadership conference for all the GPSA organizations among the Ivy universities. And so it was a really productive time. We went to sessions about funding and mentoring and events and all sorts of things, advocacy as well. And so it was just a good time for us to generate ideas and bring ideas back with us. And also one of the other important things is just to see how it's run, because in fact next year Cornell and the GPSA is hosting the Ivy Summit here in Ithaca. So there will be plenty of opportunities to get involved in helping to plan that event. And I suppose if you have any interest in that, or if you want to learn more about what happened at the Ivy Summit, feel free to talk to me or Mario, Deandra. Yurin was there, and Brian, he came along with us. So, next item, every semester, President Skorton brings student leaders together just to talk about things that are going on within the organization. So the president of the student assembly, the undergraduate student assembly, Mike and Kate Duke are there as trustees. The president of the Greek Council, all of these leaders are there. And so we came together last week, I believe, and had a discussion. I guess one of the most important things to come out of that our conversation was that in the budget campaign, about $300 million is getting reprioritized out of facilities and into support for student either financial aid or recruitment or whatever. And so of that $300 million, $25 million is going to grad fellowships, which I thought was nice. This was $25 million that wasn't being planned for grad fellowships, is now being planned for grad fellowships. So we didn't go into a lot of detail. We just we had general conversation about the budget. But you probably noticed he sent out an email recently, and he plans to send out monthly updates on the budget. Especially given rough economic times. And he also said that another important thing that he said is that oftentimes the president, he feels like he's reaching out to undergrads more perhaps than graduate students, and that's because he writes a column in the Daily Sun and some of these other ways that he is visible to undergrads. But he wanted everybody to know, grads and professional students to know, that he is there to listen to your concerns, to have meetings with you or whatever. And he said please to email him if you have any concerns or questions. And so he wants you to know he has an open door. Next, assembly's leadership breakfast. So speaking of facilities, we had the leaders of the GPSA along with the SA and the UA meet with one another once a month, and we usually have a leader from campus come and speak to us about pertinent information. This time it was about facilities projects, and so we had a discussion. We learned about some of the things that are going to be happening along with the physical sciences building that is visible to everyone. There are some other projects that are coming down the pike, although who knows what the timeline will be now with budgetary constraints and things. But I just brought that up as a way to help you guys know that we have direct communication to leaders across campus, be them the president or the employee assembly or the student assembly. So please know that if you ever have a concern or a comment, that there are channels to get those concerns and comments out. Yurin.
Was there talk about the grad student center?
No, there was not.
That is because that conversation was specific to current projects.
Right, those that have already been drafted.
Is there a sense that with $300 billion being dedicated away from those projects, that would mean that entry would be on top of that current pipeline, which is done already?
I think the president said in his email recently that there's going to be a building freeze, and then there's going to be a reevaluation of projects. So it's something that we need to keep our attention toward, obviously. But in terms of building, things are going to really get slowed down, I think.
Yeah.
In the time to come.
And the presentation.
And then finally, oh no, sorry, there's one more comment that I'll make after this that's not on the agenda, but I'm going to be going to a meeting about graduate student housing contracts, and I don't live in graduate student housing on campus, and so if any of you do and you have comments about your current contract or maybe future contracts or whatever, please send your comments to me and I'll bring those to the meeting. And then finally, what's not on the agenda is I had a meeting with the student who's in charge of Slope Day this year. Slope Day is never a dying issue in the GPSA. But she told me that there's going to be a survey coming out about Slope Day and what grad students, well, about what students in general would like to see. And the survey is supposed to also go to graduate students. So if you receive the survey, please take the time to fill it out. She said it shouldn't be very time-consuming, maybe 3 to 5 minutes. So please do that, and I'm done.
Is there anyone that doesn't know what Slope Day is? Just to check, double check. Okay, great. All right, then, DeAndre?
So I'd like to start by letting everyone know that there's a new committee report form. So for all of those who are representing grad and professional students on committees throughout the university, we created this new form to kind of streamline the reporting process, and basically it's rather brief, and it just asks for information on whether you met and what kind of issues are going on, just so that we have some way to maintain communication with you and your committee. And so we ask that these reports, I'll send them out to you if you're on a committee once a month, and for this month, it would be great if you could have them in by November 7th. And also, if you're on a committee with multiple members, only one report needs to be sent. So I'm sure that your committee chair will take care of designating a person to submit the report. Also, I would like to, you'll see the second point under my update is the Child Care Services Committee, but we have a representative for that committee. So I'd like to put in another plug for the Slope Day Programming Board. That's Mandy?
Okay. The Steering Committee.
Steering Committee. I always get them mixed up. So both of them are looking for help. But the Steering Committee will meet 3 times to discuss Slope Day, and they're looking for some grad representation. So if you are looking for a committee home and like Slope Day, please give me an email or come talk to me. And also I'm hoping that everyone here has gotten a chance to snag one of these committees that we're representing grad and professional students on, because there are a few left. Get them while they're hot. And if you... Tough crowd.
What else? Did you just mention all of the committees that need?
Oh gosh, I don't have them off the top of my head.
But there was a sheet in the back, right?
There is a list in the back of some of the committees that are still looking for grad representation, but please do pick up one of those sheets if you haven't snagged your committee spot yet, or shoot me an email and I'll send you more information.
Very good. Okay. My report, I just wanted to first, two things. One is, there is a sign-in sheet as usual. It's kind of my little job here to make sure that everybody signed in. So please, if you haven't signed in, at some point, sign in. There's also a Council of Representatives list, and I did pass this out at the last meeting, but I'm really trying to make sure that I'm not leaving anyone out. So when it comes to you, please, it says Mario's list on top, so that's how you know it's my list. If you can just, again, really make sure that I have all your information and that you just initial it so that I know that, you know, everything's correct. I did want to also, something that's not on the list, share with you that we're starting, well, a number of us have done this for a while, but I'm starting to really look at representation for the various fields, and a letter was sent out to the fields that currently don't have a rep here at this meeting. But I wanted to mention it because you all, I think, have a copy of the list, and you can see yourselves for yourselves where we are lacking representation. I think there's a whole, area of humanities that where we have one field rep. And so I wanted to point that out. You know, we're all graduate students here. We have friends in various fields. If you have a friend in the humanities or anywhere else, and you happen to know, you know, they're underrepresented, you know, please just briefly tell them, hey, you know, are you interested? And if not, you know, can you bring it up that you all should send somebody? Because I think if you're here, you realize the importance of representation and what that means to graduates. So please, you know, help out. And some of you have already been doing that. You're contacting me and telling me this is, you know, a field rep for this field, or contact this person. I think he or she may be interested. So please, you know, do all of us a favor. If you know of somebody that's in these fields that aren't represented, talk to them and see if they're interested. I also wanted to point out the minutes were up front, so when you have a chance, pick them up. If you, as a body, we don't approve our minutes for CORE because this isn't a voting body, which is something, as a side note, that I think needs to be changed in the charter. I think if these are recorded and that are noted and they're posted, that we need to approve these minutes. But that being said, we still want to make sure that they're accurate. So when you have a chance, look through the minutes, and if there are any mistakes, please either let me or Amy know, and we'll make the corrections. I've already reviewed them, and I didn't see anything incorrect, but we want to make sure they're accurate as possible. And then finally, we talked about the ad hoc committee to review the charter. It was mentioned. I mentioned it at the last CORE meeting, and I had mentioned that really it was this ad hoc committee was going to be put together during the assembly meeting itself, because of the fact that we want to make sure the assembly is involved. But I bring it here again because that committee is going to start work pretty soon. And if you're a CORE member and you didn't necessarily make it to the assembly meeting and you're interested in participating, please let Michelle know. I think we're in the process of selecting a chair, and we really want to start on that work as soon as possible before next semester. So if you're interested in reviewing the charter and making, you know, macro level changes, that would be greatly appreciated. Did you have anything to add to that?
Nope.
Sounds
okay.
Good. So we're going to move on to committee reports. And so if Brian and Mario, if you all chat with us.
All right. So I sent out an email a while back. Our November committee meeting is on November 10th. 5:15 in 404 Plant Science. I guess that the meeting is going to be the Geneva students by a video link. So we're going to hear about their meeting with Jeanette and basically what the next steps in improving communication between Geneva students and Jeanette and the health insurance office will be. And also invited is the communications committee to join us for that. One more thing before I turn over to Mario. I was at a meeting last week, and I happened to set up a meeting with the advocacy committee with Jeanette regarding mental health. So as soon as that meeting takes place, I'll let you know what happened. And finally, an issue that's come up in Mario's committee, alcohol and other drugs, is the issue of safe rides.
Sanjeev Tata and Ryan Levine of the SA presented the idea of Safe Rights Initiative to the President's Council on Alcohol and Other Drugs. The initiative is addressing existing concerns about drunk driving on campus, Cornell's hazardous geography, and walking home alone at night. So the idea for the initiative is to supplement the blue light buses, which the initiative has decided exists on 2/6 of the schedule, ends too early. Currently the blue light buses are from 6:40 p.m. to 2:30 a.m. and does not get students to their residence fast enough, or does not drop them off close enough to their residences. Also, this is meant to supplement the blue light escorts, which cannot service the large enough need of those people walking home alone. So the proposed safe ride plan would create a fleet of 2 to 4 vans initially, driven by student volunteers, have a coordinated central dispatch, have train volunteers to drive and supervise. A proposed card ID console would check the person's student status and address so that the service does not become a shuttle between parties. Right now, grad students will be able to use the service for on-campus housing. Currently, the funding for this initiative is unplanned, and Safe Rides exists currently at other campuses like Yale, Princeton, Northwestern, and UVA, which is what the RSC and the SA, those are the four colleges that they, universities that they look at to develop a plan for here. I also discovered that Duke and Illinois Champaign have services as well. UVA began with two vans and has grown to 18. They have quite an extensive Safe Rides plan service there, and it seems to be the longest running one and with the most amount of rules about how it's used. And then a subcommittee of the Alcohol and Other Drugs Council for Safe Rides Cornell has formed to study, design, and implement this program. And we would like to send an invitation for somebody to serve on that committee to help represent graduate students.
I think it would be important because if this service is being made available to graduate students, there may be other issues that, you know, specific to grad students that the committee should know about. The other issue besides the funding, because right now the committee is stuck on how exactly this is going to get paid, not only just for us, but for undergraduates as well. The other issue is insurance. So the other idea they were thinking of was instead of vans, to do something with TCAT, but they don't know what's happening with that. So if you're interested in joining this committee, please either see Mario or myself, or if you have any ideas or suggestions about what should go into Safe Ride, again, you can either email Mario or myself.
I'm not very familiar with the existing blue light service, and I'm curious what the on-campus and off-campus balance is. Is this a service that's of interest to grad students living off-campus, or is it focused on campus?
The blue light service?
And the Safe Ride program.
The blue light service is a combination of bus mission and escort service. The bus service runs from 6:40 p.m. to 2:30 a.m. is just a route that circles around between College Town up to North Campus and then back to College Town.
As far as the Safe Ride, I only asked about the on-campus housing because I didn't know if they would. In my question, I thought that would be a good place to start. I didn't know if they would agree to do off-campus. So I think that a good starting place would be on-campus, and depending on the success, maybe try to push the off-campus, but
Even with the undergraduate students, there is a big discussion about how far off campus they would be willing to serve undergraduate students. So even that is an issue. And graduate students is even further in those spaces. So I think that's why right now they would restrict us to on campus housing.
Do other universities do not have issues with finding enough volunteers?
I think Duke and UVA are the ones that I looked at the most, and Northwestern, and it seems like all three of them are completely volunteer. And with, you know, something like UVA, there's a problem finding volunteers.
Any other questions?
So again, I encourage you, if you have any suggestions about what things like should have the graduate students do, contact me. Thank you.
Well, is there, just to ask now, is there anyone that's interested possibly in serving on this committee? Just because. All right, think about it, because it's important. Okay. If we can go to Nick for a university assembly update.
Figuratively, right?
All right. I just want to give a brief update on what the university assembly has been up to. So we had a meeting last week, and there are three basic topics that we discussed. The first is we had a presentation from CU Police on gorge safety. So gorge safety is a big issue now. I guess it's always been an issue, but the presentation that we saw, the police are trying to get involved because they basically had enough of accidental play in the gorge turning into tragedies for students. And so what they're trying to do is come up with some sort of plan through the CJC that's officially proposed to the University Assembly about their kind of jurisdiction with the, you know, being able to police the gorges. I don't know the details of it. They didn't go into it too much, but they're just looking to try to enforce. I mean, they put up signs and they put up barriers that people always knock them down and go through the gorge. They don't want to restrict people from going in there. It's a beautiful place. It's natural. They understand it. It's kind of curiosity, or people should be able to do, but they shouldn't be able to swim. So one of the things that they're saying is that even accidental, well, basically his last death was the student was just waiting in what appeared to be safe water, and then they got caught in undertow or something. So what they're trying to do is prohibit any swimming in the gorges and promote, as an alternative, to promote an area that's safe to swim in. So say the area under the suspension bridge is a terrible place to swim, but if you want to enjoy the water or enjoy the beauty, maybe go downstream further. And so what they're trying to do is come up with alternatives, is to say alternative, like even putting a pool on campus, but something that encourages people to use the natural resource that we have, but in a safe way. So it's basically all that we had a discussion about that. The student assembly noted that they have a group called Friends of the Gorge that is also planning to work with the police and interested parties to kind of spread the word on how to use the gorges safely. And so if anyone's interested, I can send out the information I get about that as well. We had a very brief update from campus planning and I guess in relation to the stop on the new construction. They just talked about a lot of our topics were about the sustainability of the new buildings and how some buildings seem to fit under certain regulations and some buildings have been grandfathered in. And there's been a lot of contention, I guess, about the Milstein Hall because it's a really expensive building. I don't know too much about that. They didn't really go into it too much, but people were visibly upset and tried to, I guess, tell their emotions. But it was
that happened at the leadership breakfast,
yeah.
Too, actually.
Yeah. So we'll probably hear more. They're planning to hear more from a formal presentation on campus projects that I've seen, but I think it's very cool to learn about what's going on around campus. And then there's a brief update on one of the charges of the university assembly. They formally overlook certain groups, and one of them, and I guess the problem is that some of them have kind of become defunct. So I'm not entirely sure what this stands for, but there's a BUHS. Do you remember what that stands for? Okay, so Board on University Health Services that I think has not really been plugged into the university assembly or hasn't been. The communication has just been lost over the years. And so Seth has been working very hard to try and open up communication, make it simpler so that the university assembly can communicate with Gannett and the health services that can communicate with all the other groups that they talk to, so that it makes it much easier to spread the word and pass along information. So you'll have more information on that, I guess, after the meeting.
Okay.
Any questions for Nick? Okay. We're going to move on to new business. First, I wanted to see if Mark is in the room. Oh, hey, Mark.
Hey.
Thanks. Mark's coming to us from the Cornell Public Service Center.
So I have a handout here, just sort of what I want to do is just for maybe 10 minutes, Max. Just talk a little bit about the Public Service Center. Two things. One is just as a sort of introduction to it, in case you're just unaware of what the Public Service Center does. And another part of it is, you know, what the graduate students could do in relation to the Public Service Center. So I'm just going to have these passed out. There should be three there.
Yeah, don't be scared. This is so long. It's a good little verbose in writing this, but really, it's just going to cover the first half of it at least. So basically, yeah, just to let you know, Public Service Center based at 200 Barnes Hall. If there's anything you want to learn about more, as I talk through this, you can just go to the website address that's right on the top. As I go through this, if there's anything that you would want to get directly involved in or you know someone who would, I also have my email address at the bottom, so feel free to contact me about any of this that interests you or anyone you know. So, Public Service Center, basically the point of the Public Service Center is to help organize community and volunteer efforts at Cornell. And mainly the way this works is that they work directly with a number of student groups and, facilitate work between those groups. And I think that's a pretty broad statement, and it's, I'll go through a couple examples of those groups later on, and you can see that they have just a general, helping the community flavor to them. What the Public Service Center does is it's, another thing that it does is it coordinates the community work study programs. So there's about 300 students, mostly undergrads, that help local nonprofits and community organizations. That's very helpful because some of them, can't afford those students on their own. And those students also get the opportunity to get some experience and, get some experience helping with the local organization. There are about 20 students who are actually employed directly through the Public Service Center, most of them undergrads, leaders of student organizations, but also graduate students, like me. I've been there a couple years, and basically with graduate students, if you decide to work there, they end up, you're basically an advisor for multiple groups. So there are a number of groups that are, that are under the umbrella of the Public Service Center. And as a graduate student, you get to help out with a couple of them. And I'll actually talk about some of the ones that I help out with directly. And I hope that didn't bias what I'll cover with you guys, but I can mind it a little bit just to apologize. Some of the main highlights of the Public Service Center. I think one of the interesting things about, the work that's done there is that a lot of organizations like the Quants, how big their budget is and how much gets done based on money. The thing about the Public Service Center is they're really proud about what gets done without the money spent. So, for example, it's a shoestring budget, but to give you an idea, the budget to pay the volunteers in all these different organizations, if you ended up giving them a minimum wage, it would be on the order of hundreds of thousands, and I think when I looked at the numbers last, a reasonable wage would have been $1 million, and that's it's a fair number of activities going on. And like I said, I'll get to a couple. I think one of the other great things about the Public Service Center at Cornell, it's trying to connect, Cornell up here on the hill with the local community in a lot of ways. And this is really important, especially, one of the focuses is, K through 12, outreach to students. And Ithaca is sort of this, sweet spot where we've got this, this ivory tower, this, really great, a lot of brain power, going on in Cornell. But it's nice to be able to have this. A community, a rural community that doesn't have a lot of the same experiences and a lot of the same opportunities and exposure to things. And that's one of the nice things about all the groups in the Public Service Center, especially the ones that focus on K-12 outreach, because, you might have some interested teachers within Ithaca, for example, but once you take a few steps out of Ithaca, almost universally, all of these groups, the teachers love when, demonstrations, activities, projects, when they get sent out there. And that's one of the key things about you know, one of the advantages that Cornell has compared to other universities, especially in this context. Another thing about the Public Service Center is that, and this is something that you would hear over and over, and after a couple years, it's it gets to be a little much, but a focus on not only helping the community, so not only the side where the students that work there in these groups, not only is it that they end up helping the community in a particular path, but there's also a focus on making sure that the student benefits as well, you know, the person who is helping. So there's a lot of focus on making sure that there's service learning going on, and that can be in all sorts of different ways, you know, helping students with, you know, leadership skills, you know, improving their communication, also helping in organizing these particular groups, and interacting with, you know, a number of groups within the Public Service Center and making sure that the interactions with the community are going smoothly. A little bit of anecdotal here, but one of the other great things is that if you end up having someone who's motivated enough and they want to help the local community, I mean, this is the place to go, you know, so for example, there's a student that wanted to end up improving improving the exposure that students have to science education. And he had a particular idea, he was all gung-ho about it, and then he ended up coming to the Public Service Center, discussing it, and found out that, oh, there's a group that's doing something similar. But instead of saying, oh, it's being done over there, it actually worked out that the idea that he had in his head, a little bit more of a sustained effort than what the current group at the Public Service Center does, that became a sort of offshoot of the group, and now he's running with it with a couple students. And that's just the sort of thing that can happen, is that, you know, you can, I mean, if you have a student that's motivated enough, the way to make it happen, I mean, that's part of the point of the Public Service Center, is just to make sure that those steps, you know, can be followed through. Why grad students should get involved? I think, you know, a big one, a stress all across the board there, is the service learning. I mean, you actually learn something from doing this. I know for me, from personal experience, I mean, you end up, it's sort of a test, because it can be an organizational nightmare if you're advising like multiple groups, but you also end up, being able to better structure your time, and being in a role like that, you do learn something about, I mean, it does help in that context. I think another really great thing about graduate students is that, and this can be, you know, especially important for particular grad students, but sometimes you feel a little isolated, like everything is Cornell related, especially if you don't work off campus in any way. And a lot of the work at the Public Service Center, it necessarily, you know, engages the community. And especially engages, the more underrepresented and less privileged groups. And it makes sure that, it's a way that you can definitely feel like you're making an impact a little bit more directly than sometimes the case of research, where the impact may be, far into the future. And just one other thing I wanted to mention about this before getting into a couple of the groups is that, outreach is also, it's playing a bigger role in government funding and especially fellowships. I think that there's a little bit of a disconnect between what advisors might be saying as far as how much outreach should be a part of your education, because to be honest, a lot of advisors just say don't do it. But on the other hand, I can tell you, for example, institutions like the National Science Foundation, if you're applying for fellowships, they'll ask you something like, okay, what are your broader impacts? You know, what role might you have in the local community. And to give you an idea, like in my department, out of 30 people, out of 30 graduate students, the two that got NSF funding end up having a significant role in the Public Service Center, and I don't think that that's a coincidence. So I think just keep in mind that even though your advisor, if you discuss it, might have a particular opinion, you might want to look up these, you know, particular, especially fellowship organizations, because they usually do have an emphasis on outreach that's not stressed in the rest of graduate education. And let's see, how long was that?
Actually, we're pretty close to time. Do you want to wrap it up in about 2 minutes?
Okay. All right. So I'll just mention one of these groups, and it's particularly important for graduate students. It's called GRASP, or it used to be called GSOP. It's the Graduate Student School Outreach Project. I would say it's by far the best way a graduate student can get involved in the Public Service Center. What you do is you design a 6-week mini course on a project of your choosing, and you can pick, you know, at what range, you know, kindergarten through 12th grade that you would like to have this course for, and the point of Grasshopper is to connect you with a teacher that might be interested in your particular topic. And something they don't want to stress is, you can do this, and you even get a little honorarium at the end. It's sort of nice. So they don't want to really stress that, because trust me, it's not, you know, a little honorarium is not like, hey, for what you're doing. It should be motivated for other reasons. But as far as the timeline goes on this group, there's a November 7th deadline. All you have to do by that deadline, or probably after, that's a little flexible, is to have just a sort of paragraph description of a particular project you might want to do. And just to give a quick idea of what some of those, you know, topics are in general, I mean, it's a broad range from science to humanity. So for example, someone ended up talking to kids about introduction to programmable digital logic. And at the same time, you know, another person was talking about exploring the culture of hip-hop. There were groups that did illusions and what that tells you about the brain. Somebody even did a Dead Poet Society-like version, you know, where they went through poetry and tried to motivate students, the whole Carpe Diem idea. Basically it gives graduate students a nice opportunity to have a project of your particular choosing, follow through with it, and have an impact in the local community. And there are a couple others there, but I think that's probably the most important one for graduate students. All right, I think that's it.
Does anybody have any questions for Mark? Mark, the only thing is I would extend an invitation for the Cornell Public Service Center. When you have, I know you have a leadership series, but whenever you have an event that that you want to market to graduate students, if you can email me, we have a newsletter that we send out every 2 weeks, and we can include information on that.
Okay.
Thanks for making it tonight.
All right.
Next, we have Philip. He's going to talk about the Cornell Master Plan. Phil, if you can.
It was nice to hear Mark talk a little bit about the Public Service Center. I'm kind of a person who's been here and lived in Ithaca for a little over 30 years, and I can tell you that sort of lifelong habits you develop when you're in college and graduate school in terms of being connected to your environment, connected to your community, really speaks about your character, speaks about strengthening the community. So if you have an opportunity, I guess I'd encourage you to take advantage of it. It's something that's given me a lot of rewards in the past. Anyway, my name is Phil McFerrin. I'm Director of Planning and Special Projects with Campus Life, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about a master planning, and in particular about what we are currently engaged in. And so I'm kind of wondering, number one, have most of you heard about the recently completed 30 to 60 year campus master plan? A couple of people. All right, great. All right, so you may say, why am I here to talk to you about this? Well, It actually is in part a sort of an offshoot of the development of this very long 2-year gestation of a campus master plan. Every organization should have a general idea of what a master plan is about, where they're going, and essentially it's a roadmap. Where do you want to be in 30 or 50 years? So for Cornell, it really looks at what the core campus might develop into over the course of some 30 to 60 years. If you think about in the last 4 decades, essentially Cornell Bed is about 1 million square feet of property. And so, and that's per decade. So if you think about what's ahead, that's a lot more square footage. Where will it go? What function will it serve? How does it impact the environment? And so on. Through the whole planning process, lots of community people were involved, lots of graduate students were involved, lots of undergraduates, lots of staff people, lots of other professionals, lots of planning groups. So that was sort of brought to a finish. Recently also, there was a real estate master plan was concluded. So the Cornell master plan is one I just spoke about, really deals with the somewhat close to the 1,800 acres that really form the core campus. Real estate really takes the periphery of campus in terms of all those neighborhoods and other areas of Cornell property, about 1,400 to 1,500 acres additional, and says what should that look like? How should that be developed? One of the aspects of that is what should College Town look like? What's the impact that Cornell should have in College Town and vice versa? So let me add to that some other kinds of impetus that have happened for us, which is you've probably heard of the West Campus Collegiate Houses. The last two came online this August, and that was part of what's called the West Campus Residential Initiative. Prior to that, there was a North Campus Residential Initiative, which in fact created a all first year area that all students heretofore were sort of scattered among all the residential areas, and now they are located in the North Campus area. We also find that as we sort of do some projections ahead, we say, okay, what's our debt service look like? What could we possibly be doing with our projections for new housing, if we're going to look at that, or renovations? We know that we're going to get some debt service relief in about 2014. So it makes sense to think about how to use that kind of leverage, that kind of ability to use some capital costs, use capital costs in a different kind of way. I think one of the other things I'd say, too, is that we really do acknowledge that some of our graduate, on-campus graduate housing properties are not necessarily those which would be preferred by a lot of graduate students for a variety of reasons. Cost, type of unit, location, and certainly, you know, deterioration and that kind of thing. So one of the things that we certainly recognize as part of their graduate community initiative is that while housing was not a primary focus, it clearly was one of the issues that was brought up in terms of where do graduate students and freshman students want to live, and how do they sort of focus their energies in terms of finding a place that's suitable for their particular issue. So we come down to some questions, which is sort of where do we go from here? What kind of developments, what kind of locations would we be looking at? And, you know, how can we become more efficient, more effective, and particularly responding to the needs and interests of students? And what would it cost? So we really defined this in these ways. And so we said, okay, what's the best way to go at this? And I've been thinking a lot about housing, but really, in truth, I want to tell you that we are doing two master plans concurrently. One is we've already engaged a firm to look at the entire aspect of Cornell Dining Services, which is part of Campus Life. So we have a firm, consulting firm that's internationally known, that is on campus. They just completed a 3-day visit, one of probably 5 or 6 visits we'll have on campus. And we're having them look at the entire dining services top to bottom. Operations, facility, location, plans, costs, cuisine, nutrition, sustainability, you name it. We're also At the same time, we recently engaged a housing consulting firm. And that firm is Brailsford and Dunleavy, and they're also a nationally known firm that have done this kind of work, master plan work, around this country. A lot of universities, a lot of our peers, comparable institutions. What we're looking to do is really the following. We're looking to have a complete financial analysis. We're looking at benchmarking, so we're looking at all the metrics, both industry and against our own peers. We're looking at, for both housing and dining, market, student populations, culture of the campus, trend analysis, and projections, and then essentially taking a look at the development of scenarios that will allow us, in a sense, to say, what would a strategic plan of 3 to 5 years look like, and what would a master plan going out from 5 to 20 years look like, and provide a number of different kinds of aspects to that, and give us a roadmap, again, for how we might go ahead and develop where we would want to be. These will all be in conjunction with and in alignment with the campus master plan and the real estate master plan. So obviously we want to have lots of information. So the reason we chose these two particular firms is breadth, expertise, depth, previous experience, bringing projects in on time, at cost, the methodology, and the fact that they don't bring a off-the-shelf kind of a product. They particularly tailor their information, their analysis, their recommendations to a school. So even though we're an Ivy school and they've been at University of Pennsylvania and Princeton and Harvard, it doesn't necessarily mean we're going to get the same thing that those schools do. Do you know anything about those schools or any other of top flight comparable schools to Cornell? You know that the organization, the culture, the campus, everything's different. So typically you want to have a plan that really reflects a lot about what Cornell is about and what students are about. So all this started with what's called an RFP, a request for proposals, which I offered to two of them. We ended up with these two firms. We're getting to the point now where both firms are going to have an overlap. They're going to be, the projects themselves are going to be concurrent. We really would like to make sure that they are intersecting in the appropriate ways, not the least of which would be surveys. You've heard the term survey fatigue. We want to be very careful that we're not over-sampling, over-surveying people, but we're getting the kind of information that's going to be appropriate for these firms in order to really provide their in-depth understanding of what this campus is about. And so we'll be asking them to combine the surveys, and it'll be a sort of a branch survey. So if you're a graduate student, you're living off campus, you'll be directed this way. If you're a graduate student or a professional student living on campus, you'll be directed this way. If you're an undergraduate, you'll be going off in this direction, and so on. So in any event, you might say, well, okay, how are you managing all this? We are through a variety of executive committees, and it's. I think that's not as important to you, but to realize what is going to be the most vital aspect is the kind of data that these firms have to work with. It really comes down to that. And here's where you come into play. Some of you may be asked to fill out a survey, so I encourage you, to participate in that. There's also opportunities. For some of you, and I was talking to Michelle earlier, that with the housing master plan, we're going to start with a visioning session, which essentially will bring together people from around the university, taking a look at where do we want to go, what kind of outcome do we want to have with this, which will set the principles for how this study will be done. Each of these studies will last about 6 months. They cost some bucks, but like anything else, you put some dollars in, you get something back out. And so one of the things that we want to do is make sure that we get the best product out. So in that sense, what we're looking to do is have some people who would like to participate in this visioning process to start with. And I'd like to ask you if you have some interest in that to direct your enthusiasm toward Michelle and Mario, and we could probably find some ways for that to happen. We'll also be doing focus groups. We'll be doing small group interviews and some other kinds of ways in which people will have an opportunity to voice what they believe are their interests. And in this particular group, you are representatives of your field. You have listeners within your own departments and fields. So you're really in an ideal situation to be able to query your colleagues and your friends to find out the kinds of things that would make a difference to them, whether that's about dining. We have 34 dining facilities on campus, everything from retail stores to all-you-can-eat to board plan locations. And a lot of people have a lot to say about food. And there's a lot of graduate students who don't necessarily eat on campus a lot. Perhaps it's cost, perhaps it's not the cuisine they like, perhaps it's not convenient, the hours aren't right, all sorts of things. In order for the dining consultant, Kaizen, in order to be able for that group to give us the right kind of information about, you know what, Cornell, you know what, campus life, you should close this location, you should open this location, you should renovate this location, you should do this or do that, and here are the costs associated with all of that. That's where your input's going to be important. Okay.
I was part of some of the initial start of the GCI, and I know the graduate students have a feel for the fact that they're not as well served as undergraduates. There's been a lot of effort, a lot of money, a lot of attention paid to the living learning environment for undergraduates. Only recently have graduate students had the opportunity, really, to find that they have an audience and that they represent a third of the student population, and you deserve to have some notice and have an environment that's conducive and supportive of what you're all about. Okay. So, essentially what we're talking about then is really for us to be able to identify opportunities, whether it be in the dining services area or whether it be in the housing area. How to enhance that, to look at performance improvement, and to provide some strategic notions regarding our operating and sort of our development decisions. Am I late or am I early? As all things in life, there's always going to be an equilibrium between sort of the facilities you can offer, the programs you can offer, the service you can offer, the quality that you're willing to pay for, and obviously the financial cost of all of that. So. Campus life, I might tell you, is one of the enterprise needs on campus. There are no tuition dollars that flow to campus life. So everything we do essentially is built upon housing and dining revenues. Okay. So it's not like if we were to decide we really do need some additional graduate facilities, we recognize that Maplewood Park Apartments is an apartment complex that's not as suitable for many people who like to live on campus as they could. We know it's deteriorating. We know that it was a manufactured housing unit. It was built for 20 years, and guess what? We're a little bit past that point. So we're getting to the point now we're saying, well, if we were to develop a larger graduate community with the kinds of accommodations and housing, what would it look like? And that's why we need the input from you. So in that sense, we really have at our goal to say, we know these things are coming up, how are we best going to meet those objectives? And so it's really something that we're pretty excited about. We have an opportunity to essentially sort of plot the course for our campus life. Some of us won't be here in 20 years or 30 years, but the truth of that, at least at Cornell, but the truth of the matter is that we have you have an opportunity to contribute to what it might look like a generation from now and beyond. And so I guess I'd encourage you to participate as you can. It would be kind of fun, I think, to sit with a lot of other people in the university and toss ideas around and then ultimately see whether or not any of them come to fruition. We are also conscious of the fact that graduate students live downtown, graduate students live in College Town, Upper College Town, Lower College Town. They live in Varna, Danby, Dryden, to the Heights. And so, what would draw people in if they were to be interested in that? And what would it need to look like
make you know, make people interested in that kind of thing. So we also recognize that, for example, as I said, college towns are going to get redeveloped one way or another. And there are some things going on now. We're in discussion with a number of developers. We know there's a moratorium in College Town right now for building for another 6 months. But we also know that when the floodgates let go, there'll be a lot of older houses coming down and a lot of new properties going up. So lots of things are going to be happening over the next number of years for sure. And it's going to be pretty interesting along the way. So let me stop and ask if you have any questions real quickly. I don't know what kind of time we have to work with.
Well, we're over late, but okay. if anybody has a question, we can certainly entertain them.
Sure, go ahead.
Good question. Talk about housing plans for campus. Are you, I know that Cornell is in a statement that there will be no increase in total student enrollment in the student enrollment in the foreseeable future.
Undergraduate, yeah. Right.
So are you talking about improving the number of beds on campus, the conditions of the beds, or are you talking about improving the number of beds?
It could be a little bit of both. But clearly, you know, the housing portfolio doesn't provide enough single rooms for the demand for sophomores to seniors in terms of single rooms, more privacy. You know, the trend over the last number of years on a national level has certainly been toward either suite arrangements or 2 and 3 and 4 bedroom apartments, 2 bedrooms or 2 bathrooms in an apartment, that kind of thing. We don't have a lot of that, so we may be trading kinds of spaces. I will tell you that our priority at the moment, vis-a-vis housing, is to really look at graduate housing. And so one of the things that I'm pushing our housing consultant is to say, okay, we want you to focus on graduate housing first. That's the priority. That's not to say we're leaving the other behind, but really I want some heavy evidence on the front end regarding graduate students. What we need to do is get some very good data before we can start making the kind of decisions, because we're under pressure, as I just mentioned, in terms of with developers coming to us and saying, hey, we'd like to work with you. Would you, you want to come in and help us develop this particular property? So if you look at the kind of study that graduate students, about the graduate student growth, you see very, very small incremental growth over the next, 10 years. I'm not convinced that necessarily is true, but that's what's out there publicly anyway. On the undergraduate side, some of the constraint is that there's only so many beds for first-year students and only so many beds for transfer students. Consequently, you can't grow those classes very much until subsequent housing might be developed. And there's possible sites on campus where that might happen over time.
Maybe one last question. Jeremy?
Sure. I really find this, thanks for your presentation. I really think this is very important, and I'm glad to hear that you want to focus on graduate housing first.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that it's very nice to see that the Best Temps Residential Initiative has been very successful, and that's what it looks like to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's time that something similar happens for the graduate students. However, I'm concerned now with the United States recent moratorium on planning, et cetera, how all these things will go ahead. And
sure.
It seems to me that one thing one will have to do is, if I think of Maplewood, one will somehow have to close it down and rebuild it, and that seems to require a big investment. And now you just said that you're... you're trying to make either profit or break even because you're an independent enterprise.
Correct.
In front of
break even. Right.
So I wonder whether there's a sense that you will need money committed from the university to invest and pay back over time, or whether you are thinking of investing that yourself. And I wonder what happened to Maplewood land, which put up at some point, so now it should come to the end of the cycle. So does that mean there have been some savings from the revenue that generated, or will you have to take out and go?
Okay, so that's more like a 5-year
I think, answer. Like, how are you going to fund it?
I can't possibly answer your question in its totality. Let me say that we are recognizing the exigencies that exist at Cornell now with respect to the financial situation. As David Scorton said, Cornell's in good shape, but we have to look for the future. So there are lots of constraints now being put on everything from hiring pauses to
a hiatus with all kinds of projects, whether regardless of the phase that they're in, whether it's program design, schematic design, pre-construction, or construction. So for the foreseeable future, we're looking at a situation where, you know, not much is going to be happening. But we're looking at a long term. We're not looking this next year. We're not looking at 2 years from now. We're really looking at an opportunity to sort of have a terrain map opened up and say, well, here's where we would, here's where we are, here's where we'd like to be. How would we get there? What would it look like? And develop that over the course of time. With that, the financial side of that would also come into play. And there's a whole variety of schemes. I don't know if a lot of you are have had a financial background per se, but clearly there's a lot of different ways in which to make that kind of $20 to $50 to $75 million project happen. And there is internal borrowing to Cornell, but we end up paying it back. You know, again, there's no dollars that come from tuition dollars, you know, to us. And generally speaking, alumni and friends of the university and the campaign are not thrilled about sort of doing the building. Some are, but the vast majority of dollars are really going toward programs, faculty, students, financial aid, that kind of thing. So, so it would really be sort of built upon, you know, what kind of revenue streams you can generate and obviously keep the concomitant development under control. So we know Maplewood needs to go down, but there are lots of ways to make that happen. You can do it in stages and build more dense property, have a throw off of greater revenue than you did before for the same footprint by going vertically. Mm-hmm. You can do mixed use kinds of projects and so on. In other words, bring some commercial retail in at the same time. You can expand the property. There's opportunities for that and so forth. So that's probably general answer to your question. Okay?
Sure.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
And Michelle is just going to get something in really quick.
So I just wanted to say to everyone that Phil has been kind of a friend of the GPSA for many years. And so I just wanted to thank you for coming because for sure he knows what's going on. He knows what is relevant to graduate students, and so I want to thank you for that. And then I want to reiterate something that he said, and that is not only are these committees or these ways that he solicited your advice and your commitment, they're ways that you can get involved and make your voices known, but it's also a way for you to meet others on campus and learn about kind of the ins and outs and maybe even the bureaucracy that goes along with some of this decision making. So I do want to encourage you guys to get involved. I know that he'll be channeling information to me. So please, if you're interested, please let me know and we'll connect you guys.
Yeah, lots of opportunities.
And Phil, when you have those opportunities, specifically like the focus group,
mm-hmm.
as I mentioned earlier to Mark, we have a GPSA info that we do send out directly to graduate students. So not only can we individually as members send it out to our listservs, but we could send it out through that listserv as well.
Yeah.
So you could direct that to me when and if it comes time.
Super.
Thanks.
Very good.
Thanks.
Phil. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. I wanted to move on to other new business, and I wanted to explain a little bit what is meant by that. I really, as I mentioned at the previous meeting, would like to move us all as a body to really stimulate ideas and to kind of talk about new things that come up. For example, I want to move Open Forum really to what it should have been, which was purely announcements, but then open up new business to issues like what DeAndre brought up. That's something that it's a new issue. She noticed something that in her field people are having a problem with. Let's actually have a little bit of a discussion and let's find out who would be the appropriate person to, you know, to follow up on that. And if there is no current appropriate person, whether it's, you know, a rep on a committee or a committee itself, then, you know, should we create something new? That kind of conversation. And so to that extent, I wanted to first open it up to see if anybody has any new business. And then second, just maybe throw out two things that I thought of that could be new business as we move forward. So because I hadn't mentioned this before, I don't necessarily expect any new business, but I wanted to put it out there. Does anybody have anything that's been happening in your field, any problems that you noticed on campus, anything that you'd like to bring up? Cricket. Oh, yes.
I have a general observation in my life.
especially during these times like fall break or spring break or even summer break, the winter time when the undergrads are gone, I feel like the university sort of shuts down. Mm-hmm. And especially things like Barton Hall, where usually a lot of grad students go there to either run around the track or play basketball or something like that, it's not available during those times.
Dining services as well.
I mean, there's many things on campus that sort of shut down just because the undergrad's not here. And so I don't know who does direct that.
Do we have a committee that has a purview or that gives feedback to the university on that? Do you know off the top of your head?
Yeah, this is something that the UA brings up.
Is this something that other people have noticed, or would anybody like to add something to that? Everybody's just, yeah. There's nothing else to add. It happens to all of us. Ah, that is an interesting...
Well, that's more academic, though.
We were even talking about this. I taught a class a few weeks with fall break, and we were talking about this a little bit, how there are so many activities and things like that geared towards undergraduate populations during these breaks, like fall breaks, but grad students may not get those breaks or they're here in Ithaca. So finding out some more programming, like the biggest bar shuts down in the summer. Frankly, how many of us are still on campus all summer long? You know, that to me, and I know that's a funding issue, but for the Big Red Barn to only be open on Fridays for TGIF, I know a lot of grad students use it as a study place or a place to get away from the lab or whatnot. So that kind of thing as well.
Okay.
Oh,
yes.
So it's a general feeling that certain services, certain facilities are being closed. I just wanted to say, I brought this other new business up because not necessarily because I think we're going to come up with solutions today, but then that gives the exec and all of you opportunities to think about it. I know that we have a number of meetings that we can bring this up and it could stimulate further conversations and possible solutions. I know that our next breakfast on Tuesday, the assembly's breakfast, President Scorton is going to be at the meeting. So while we may not, you know, think that that may be the appropriate time to bring up this issue, there are other similar opportunities, meetings with the graduate school itself, that while they may not also be able to do something directly about it, that we could use their office to leverage some kind of solution. So we'll bring this back up during our next meeting, and we'll see what we've come up with since then. But at the same time, if there's someone here in this room also that feels passionate about it and would like to do some follow-up, you know, please contact us, and we'll work on that together. So I wanted to appreciate, thank you very much for bringing that issue up. And just again, this is the kind of thing that we want to bring up. Does anybody have any other new business? Yes?
Yeah, I noticed that the increased number of spam that people are getting, and I think one of the reasons for that is our electronic directory lists addresses. So if you send out a call, you can actually collect it fairly easily. Whereas Harvard and Princeton's, you actually have like an app. If they're all found directly, so I'm wondering if it's impossible to ask CIT to convert the addresses.
Wait, what did you say about Harvard?
So
the example you gave?
So if you go to the directory, Harvard says, you can find it using the JGL at Harvard, with the app symbols, and it really is an app, so it's a crawler that's sent out to Harvard's email addresses. Flex up and I'm going to do this on email.
Would that be a temporary solution? Would people eventually catch on and then try the at? Just out of curiosity. Okay, just bring it up. I thought you might know. But okay.
So there is an information technologies committee, and so we'll make sure that we direct that your comment to the graduate student who's serving on that committee, because we do have a grad serving on that committee, and we'll see that that issue gets brought up at their next meeting.
Okay. Any other new business? Yeah. So would you say this is more of an issue of educating the broader graduate community about what their options are, or creating options?
I think a little bit of both, because you look at something like what Yale did last year. They have an entire mentorship meeting talking about how not only you build an effective mentorship relationship with your advisor, but how you as a graduate student facilitate effective mentorship with, say, undergraduates. Most of us are in teaching or mentorship situations and may or may not have a whole lot of guidance from being in that. Some of us have very good mentors in different aspects of our careers, but having something to go with that is okay.
I wonder if the Center for Teaching Excellence might play a role in that eventually. Yeah. Brenda?
Just to talk over Amy's shoulder, there's actually a growing consensus and I think effort across a broad variety of programs and departments at the university to look at mentoring as one of the goals of being an excellent university, a caring community. Many of the different program initiatives and in some cases catchphrases that are out there. The graduate school actually is working with faculty and student focus groups to review mentoring material to be disseminated to all incoming first year graduate students next year. And then we're looking over this next spring semester to get input from students and faculty about when and how to address issues or introduce ideas around mentoring. The Center for Teaching Excellence, I know Richard was here, I think, last board meeting, and talked about it. We're partnering with them. We're partnering with the Knight Writing Institute, the graduate faculty is involved in assessing and reviewing documents. Michelle Moody Adams, the alumni mentoring folks, as well as Cornell Career Services, because they're introducing a new module on alumni mentoring outside of the academic field. So there is a lot of movement, and I think you're right. At this point, it's talk. But again, I'm sort of like a broken record, but exactly what Phil said. Now is the time to be voicing your opinions. When I send out the calls for focus groups, people who have opinions and experiences or just want to put their two cents in. And certainly if you have faculty that have been excellent mentors, or the other kind, certainly you can bring them up as examples or perhaps even encourage them to step forward. Mentoring isn't a one-size-fits-all, you know, it's very specific for discipline and personality and a lot of other factors go into it. So we're not trying to do a cookie cutter, here's what a Cornell mentor looks like, here's what you do when you're a mentor, but we're really trying to get some general information, general outlines, and then support services. And the Center for Teaching Excellence is definitely one of what I see as the key initiatives for stepping up excellence in mentoring and teaching for faculty and grad students.
Are you partnering with the Faculty Senate at all, or some other channel to which you can reach the faculty more easily?
The faculty is actually sort of the faculty policy oversight for the graduate field,
Okay.
And I think we're starting there.
Okay.
How policy works above that, Michelle, I'm still not sure. But anyway, that's where we decided to go to get feedback and to try and get the buy-in before pushing further.
Yeah, because I think that's really key. I mean, you hear from graduate students that they want more on mentoring or workshops or whatever, but I'm just curious if the faculty are even aware of what you're doing or what kind of buy-in they would have on something like this, or do they just live in their own world and figure out, they just continue doing what they're doing, and
there are different levels of involvement.
Yeah.
A little bit like herding cats.
Yeah, right.
But no, there are very wonderful and effective faculty mentors on campus as well. You can't
generalize. Right. Of course not.
Thank you. Is there anybody else? Anything else? Okay. Then I just wanted to bring up, I didn't think there was going to be this much. I'm actually pleasantly surprised. Thank you all for doing this. Actually, it's a lot of great things to follow up on.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring up just an issue that I think the ad hoc charter review committee could bring up, and that's I think everyone in this room is here because you genuinely care, maybe a little bit more than our colleagues about what happens here at Cornell, and but I do feel that we need to incentivize things a little bit more to say, to make people feel appreciated if you don't feel appreciated already. And while we were at the Ivy Summit, we realized that different schools, of course, do different things. And even at the executive committee, we were talking that there are incentives, even for all of us. I mean, whether it's a meal here or there. But I really want us to think about how to incentivize not just those that are already here, but how to attract further participation from the broader community. And yes, that may also include, a little thank you to this body for all the work that you do throughout the year. So for the charter committee, that's something that hopefully they will discuss. And another issue is, and I think it was brought up at a previous meeting. I don't know if it was an assembly or a core meeting, but someone had, I think on campus, has this great idea of renting out bicycles. And I just kind of want to use it as an example. This doesn't necessarily have to be what we do. But I think in future years, and again, this could also be considered under the charter review, I think that this body could, in future years, actually retain some of the funding, whether it's through increasing the student fee, or whether it's we just reallocate some of the control of some of the funds to this body, so that we can actually do larger scale projects, such as if we feel that we want to, as a whole body, because having all of that money together in one pot, that we feel that there's something worthwhile that can further the mission of the university and also the things that graduates care about, such as in this case, helping sustainability and helping people with transportation through this little bicycle card checkout system, that we're able to do that. And so I just wanted to bring those two up as ways to kind of stimulate conversation. And in the future, when we do have new business, I think, again, it can be those ideas that we may not be able to do right now, but maybe we can get started on, so that, we just have some long-term goals and change things up a bit and just be better advocates. So I don't know if any of you have any comments on either of those two ideas, but certainly the ad hoc committee could on the charter could consider those when they're reviewing our charter. Any comments? Besides thumbs up, say. Okay. Any other new business? Great. Then, is there a motion to adjourn the meeting? Is there a second? All those in support say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Abstentions. Meeting's adjourned at 6:56. How do you stop? Yeah, just hit the red button, right?
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.